Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Is tea your tipple of choice, or are you more partial to a brewed cup of coffee? Staples like these are being impacted by the unholy trinity of climate change, supply chain issues and geopolitics, which has seen many of the household staples that make up our shopping basket rise in price. The Central Statistics Office confirmed that since 2018, tea has risen by 7% here, while coffee has gone up by 15% in price. So how much can we expect to pay for our favourite hot drinks in the future? I'm joined on the line now by John Sweeney, Emeritus Professor at Maynooth University and climatologist, and Chris Elliott, Professor of Food Security at Queen's University Belfast. Gentlemen, good morning to both of you. John, can I begin with you and tea and climate change? What areas of the world have been struggling with crop failures because of climate?
Well, tea is a very sensitive crop. It's only grown in very restricted parts of the world near the equator, but it's also a crop that requires to be at high altitude. It gets a lot more sunlight, and it's rather cooler at higher altitude. And in the areas of concern, really, are first of all, Assam in India. And at this time of the year, probably many people are packing their suitcases full of tea bags to go on holiday. It's a tradition in Ireland, and we don't like the tea abroad, and we don't like the tea necessarily that people in the UK like. We like the richer, darker, more flavoursome tea that you get from Assam, and that's the area that has been affected quite badly by extremes of climate over the past few years. It's a very prone to flooding area. But it's also an area where they've been getting high temperatures. And when you get high temperatures, the leaves don't really develop that well. The shoots kind of frizzle up and die, basically. And so they've been suffering quite a substantial loss in yield. And at the same time, of course, even further south in India, we've seen the horrific heat waves that they've been getting as well. So we've been getting a lot of those increasing extremes. And for a crop like tea, and to a lesser extent coffee, which are very sensitive to movements out of the norm, if you like, in temperature and rainfall, that has meant yield reductions. And the tea, for example, as people will have noticed, has gone up quite considerably in price over the past year. And that's a reflection of failures in the harvest occurring in key producing areas, especially in India at the moment, and Kenya. We know how East Africa has been suffering erratic rainfall now for a number of years. And most of the UK crop, for example, the UK imports of tea, they come from Kenya. So those two key producing areas have suffered quite a lot. And the signs are that they're going to become more and more unreliable, if you like, in the years ahead. And that means uncertainty for supply. And that means usually substantial increases in prices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the losses, around 20% loss in the harvest in those areas occurring at the moment.
So let me bring in Chris Elliott, Professor of Food Security here. Sticking with tea, Chris, what impact is the conflict in Gaza having on supply chains?
Yes, I mean, first of all, I mean, I very much concur with what John said. I mean, climate is the real single biggest factor in terms of issues of production and rising costs. But also, I mean, we have a world full of conflicts at the moment. There's more conflicts in the world now than at any time over the last 100 years or so. And what we found is the impacts of the war in Gaza is the massive issues in terms of the Red Sea. Most of the world's shipping, particularly from Asia, from Southeast Asia into Europe, would have used the Red Sea route, and it's become more and more dangerous now. So a lot of the shipping companies are taking the alternative routes, the very long way round the southern horn of Africa. And what that is means it takes an extra 4, 6, even 8 weeks for the products, things like tea and spices, to come to us. And then, of course, there's the additional cost that brings about as well. So for tea, it's absolutely climate, but we've got all of the impacts of wars happening in different parts of the world impacting also.
Chris, these just-in-time systems in supply chains were developed to reduce costs. So now with these kind of disruptions, companies are probably stockpiling. Does that increase costs having to store a product?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point that you make. You know, and for the last 20 years, there's been this whole drive for just-in-time. And just-in-time is about reducing costs absolute to the minimum, so you don't have to store lots of materials for very long periods of time. And you know, in the UK, there used to be several months of food actually in storage now, and it's now less than 2 weeks because of this just-in-time system. A lot of companies are starting to rethink that and, you know, looking for additional space, storage space. Tea isn't that expensive to store because you can store it at what's called ambient. That's, you know, kind of at room temperature. But can you imagine some of the things that have to be stored in cold chills? That really is driving the price as well. But there's an absolute understanding. Fragile supply chains means that just-in-time actually doesn't work anymore.
But space is money, the extra miles going around Africa is money, and reduced yield, as John says, from climate change is money as well. Let's turn our attention to coffee. What kind of an impact has climate change been having on coffee production, John?
Well, coffee, like tea, likes to be grown maybe 1,000 metres or so, or even more, above sea level. So you get coffee also in the highlands of the equatorial zone. The main producers would be, of course, Brazil, Colombia, and Vietnam. And there's two different types of coffee that are quite important here. If you go to your barista-type coffee shop, you're getting mainly Arabica coffee, which is the kind of premium brand of coffee. And that would be mainly grown in Colombia and Brazil. And that has been not so badly affected by the drought and the floods in Brazil this year as might have been expected. But when you get to Vietnam, which is growing the Robusta coffee, which is more for the mass market, about 40% of the Vietnamese crop, for example, is bought up by Nestle each year. And it goes into making mainly instant coffee. But that has been quite badly affected by heat this year because the coffee berry the coffee bean is actually a seed within a cherry in the coffee plant. And if you get drought, then the cherry doesn't develop. It's rather like tomatoes you might grow in your greenhouse that you don't water. And so the yield has been falling quite substantially in Vietnam in particular. And that has been affecting the overall supply. And what Chris is saying, I think, is very true here, that in the past, when just-in-time was okay, because you could replace a failure in one area with a surplus in another area to make up that deficit in supply. But what we're seeing now climatically is that, you know, the jet stream disruption is meaning that you get the jet stream off almost locked in position, giving you simultaneous problems in many key parts of the world. So we had that last summer, if you remember, with droughts in Europe, in China, in the United States, all at the same time. And that's where the real problem for supply for coffee as much as for tea comes into play, where you might get all of those places suffering maybe even different kinds of weather extremes at the same time. And that's where the food insecurity issue, I suppose, comes to the fore there, because, you know, you're looking at the possibility of not being able to make good the supply. And the stores, as Chris said, they will only last so long. And then you're facing a substantial increase in prices. There we are at the moment with coffee in many parts of the world.
John, there are natural variables in the climate like El Nino, which have caused particular havoc in the course of the last 12, 18 months. And we must remember here that food producers and farmers are endlessly adaptable. Do you think that they will be able to adapt as the climate systems hopefully return to a more default normal? Or is what we have seen in the last year, year and a half, just kind of a bit of a glimpse into the future?
Well, when you're talking about those two crops of tea and coffee, of course, they're almost on very well, long-established plantation-type systems. And once they begin to fail in that location, you have very few options. I mean, there are signs that some of the more premium types of coffee, the coffee Arabica, that will grow better at even higher altitudes as temperature warms up. And there will be some displacement occurring in that area. But with El Nino, for example, we've seen that kind of dislocation occurring. And we've seen, for example, in the last week, the two hottest days ever recorded on the planet coming in the 21st and I think the 22nd of July. So we're seeing El Nino having exacerbated those problems, especially in places mm-hmm. like South America last year. But the indications are that, you know, maybe we won't see quite so many extremes now being exceeded for the second half of the year as La Nina takes over and we cool down a little. Okay. But it's not quite clear that that's going to happen at the moment.
Chris, final question to you. Another disruption here is the emergence of the BRICS as a trading bloc to be contended with. That's Brazil, Russia, India, China. How much of a disruption to the what we would perhaps in this North Atlantic part of the globe consider the more normal run of events? How much of a disruption has that been?
Yes, so not so many people are familiar with BRICS, and as you say, it's Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Argentina joined recently, Thailand joined recently, and this is really going to be a major competitor to the EU in terms of trade, economic trade. And you know, the trade agreements that are being put in place by the BRIC countries, we should really start to pay attention to. BRICS is now more than 50% of the world's population. But in terms of food, it's nearly two-thirds of all the food that's produced in the world. And, you know, they're entering into really good trade agreements, no tariff agreements. So the likelihood is that there's going to be even more pressures on a lot of different food commodities, beverage commodities mm-hmm. that are coming into Europe and the United States. You know, it's fundamentally changing. And I read an article just a few weeks ago that was written in China to say that BRICS is a new world food power. I think we all became very familiar with OPEC and how OPEC controlled oil. I think in the future, BRICS will have similar types of control over foodstuffs and beverages going forward.
Right. Maybe get used to using those tea bags once, twice, maybe even three times. John Sweeney, Chris Elliott, thank you both very much. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.